Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, August 22nd, 2019. Coming up this hour,
global stocks enter a holding pattern ahead of Jerome Powell's speech in Jackson Hole.
Traders keep bets on rate cuts in place after minutes from the Fed show diverging views.
Up next, we get an account of the European Central Bank's latest policy meeting.
President Trump's back and forth with Denmark's prime minister has taken a nasty turn. Plus, the president wants car makers to stop being PC on his mileage plan. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Coming up in sports, hits aren't the problem. Runs are for the Yankees, while the Mets win again, walking off the Indians.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks are struggling for a direction as we await tomorrow's speech from Jerome Powell. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 3 points, Dow futures down 23, NASDAQ futures down 16. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%, CAC in Paris down 0.25%, and the FTSE 100 down 0.5%. Nikkei 225 in Japan, little change today, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong down about 0.8%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.57%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.55%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 24 cents at $55.92 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.5% or $7.80 at $15.07.90 an ounce. The euro 1.1099 against the dollar, and the yen at 106.40. Nathan.
Karen, central bankers and economists are making their way to Jackson Hole, Wyoming for the Federal Reserve's annual symposium, where a speech from Chairman Jerome Powell takes center stage tomorrow. Bloomberg's Michael McKee is there and brings us a preview.
The theme this year is challenges for monetary policy, but the unspoken topic is how to manage an economy under assault from within. A U.S. economy growing at 2% with unemployment at 3% and inflation near 1.7% shouldn't need rate cuts. But the president's trade war has rattled business leaders who all but stopped new spending and markets which have priced in significantly lower rates. Chairman Jay Powell kicks off this annual conference in the Wyoming mountains with a keynote speech on Friday morning. During the financial crisis, then-Chair Ben Bernanke used speeches here to preview QE2 and 3. Many on Global Wall Street think Powell will seize the same opportunity. In Jackson Hole, Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thank you. And we'll have interviews from Jackson Hole with several regional Fed presidents. Today, we speak with Kansas City Fed Chief Esther George at 7:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Tomorrow morning, tune in for conversations with James Bullard, Robert Kaplan, Loretta Mester, and Patrick Harker.
Now, the gathering comes as traders price in a quarter-point rate cut next month and another one later this year, though tomorrow's remarks from Chairman Powell could change that forecast. We get more from Bloomberg macro strategist Mark Cranfield.
People are hoping for a fairly benign message that sets off a bit more risk-taking in markets next week. But the FOMC minutes were not that encouraging in that respect. There were certainly some dissenting voices who were a little bit more hawkish than probably traders wanted to hear. So it looks as though we should have a pretty lively start to next week as people try and figure out what they really mean.
Minutes from the Fed's July meeting show division among policymakers. Two members voted against the rate cut, while a couple pushed for a bigger 50 basis point reduction.
We get a fresh reading on U.S. manufacturing ahead of Chairman Powell's speech with a preliminary Purchasing Managers Index for August due out at 9:45 a.m. Wall Street time. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice reports.
Factories are navigating a slowdown in global growth as well as the uncertainty of White House trade policy. Economists say this month's market manufacturing PMI will probably hover just above 50, the dividing line between growth and contraction. A factory index compiled by the Institute for Supply Management has also been flirting with contraction. In July, the ISM index registered the lowest reading since August 2016. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. Now, we have somewhat encouraging PMI data out of Europe. Activity in the euro area's private sector unexpectedly picked up this month, though a meaningful rebound remains out of sight. Markets composite PMI rose to 51.8, indicating a slightly stronger expansion than in July. The outlook for Germany, though, remains bleak, with orders falling the most in more than 6 years.
Sentiment at the European Central Bank is also in focus today, with the ECB publishing an account of its latest policy meeting at 7:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the details. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. How far will the ECB go in boosting the euro area economy next month? Investors will be asking that as they await today's accounts of the previous meeting. Now, Bloomberg Economics predicts a cut to the deposit rate next month, and President Mario Draghi has already signalled asset purchases will start again, but the size of that easing is still unknown. Meanwhile, July's euro area inflation was revised down to 1%, and that's adding to pressure for more stimulus. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thanks. Stocks and bonds in Italy are outperforming their peers after President Sergio Mattarella set a deadline to choose a new prime minister. Italy's president told the PD and five-star parties to propose a new premier by Monday or face fresh elections. Wolfengo Piccoli is director of research at Teneo Intelligence.
We have two scenarios in front of us at the end of the day, an early election before the end of the year, which I think should be still base case, or the alternative, a government five-star PD plus others with an agenda to postpone the election until the spring of next year. I don't think they can go further than that.
Only President Mattarella has the power to nominate a new leader, and we're told he wants a quick resolution.
As Global Wall Street awaits remarks from Jerome Powell, trading remains light, and that was the case overnight with stocks in Asia posting modest losses. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with the details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. The Nikkei 225 closed virtually unchanged as the yen strengthened against the dollar. Stocks in Hong Kong were weaker, with equities poised for their worst quarter since 2015. Shares in the city have lost more than $600 billion in value since June as protests continue. Australian stocks rebounded after yesterday's slump. Qantas shares rose to their highest level since January after the airline announced an off-market share buyback and a higher dividend. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thanks. We have a surprise central bank decision out of Indonesia. Policymakers there reduced interest rates for a second straight month, cutting the reverse repo rate by 25 basis points. The majority of economists surveyed by Bloomberg had expected no change.
S&P futures are down 4 points this morning. Dow futures down 30, NASDAQ futures down 20. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Okay, Karen, thank you. It is 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump says he was insulted by the response he received from the Dutch Prime Minister when he proposed buying Greenland from them. She called it absurd, and he called her nasty.
I thought it was a very not nice way of saying something. They could have told me no.
The president canceled his planned state visit to the longtime European ally. Trump says Denmark Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen is not talking to me. She's talking to the United States of America. You don't talk to the U.S. that way, at least under me. President Trump's support for new tax cuts lasted one day. Bloomberg's Martin DeCarroll reports.
After days of contradictory messages, the economy is doing great, the economy needs more stimulus, President Trump now says he's abandoning the idea of cutting the payroll tax.
We don't need it. We have a strong economy.
He's also giving up on indexing the capital gains tax to inflation.
I've looked at indexing for a long time. It's not something I love. I think it's probably better for the high-income people.
Trump again deflected criticism that his trade war with China is slowing down growth, instead blaming the Fed for the gathering clouds. In Washington, Martin DeCaro, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Two people close to Washington Governor Jay Inslee have told the Associated Press that he intends to seek a third term as governor. The news comes after Inslee announced the end of his presidential campaign last night. Senator Cory Booker believes he is the best candidate on climate in the race for the White House now that Inslee has dropped out. The New Jersey senator spoke about Inslee after a campaign event in Los Angeles last night.
He is a guy that really did a good job. I'm really happy that Greenpeace ranked him the number one candidate weeks ago, the number one candidate on climate, me the number two.
President Trump is taking a swipe at automobile manufacturers who've pushed back on his administration's plan to weaken fuel efficiency requirements, dismissing them as politically correct. In a tweet, Trump says his proposal would lower the average price of a car to consumers by more than $3,000. He went on to say, foolish executives. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street, and it's now time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Good morning, Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. For the second time in as many games, the Yankees wrap out double-digit base hits, out-hitting Oakland, only to lose to the A's. Chris Davis and Marcus Semien each hit two-run homers to back Mike Fiers as the A's beat the Yankees 6-4 for their third straight loss on Wednesday. Fiers, an impressive 12-3 as the long ball continues to haunt Jay Happ. He gave up 5 runs. He was chased after just 4 innings. Yankees also lost the best record in baseball by virtue of the Dodgers' 11th walk-off win of the year. They beat Toronto. Yankees look to avoid the sweep when they hand the ball to Masahiro Tanaka tonight at 6:30 opposite Tanner Roark. Yankees lead the East by 9 over the Rays, who beat the Mariners. Mets, they win again with an exciting comeback in walk-off fashion at Citi Field.
3-2 again, the pitch. Davis hammers it toward the left field wall. That's going to get down. Base hit. And one hops the fence and left. Conforto scores. And would you believe it? The Mets do it again. They score twice in the bottom of the 10th. And it's J.D. Davis.
Mets radio 4-3 in 10 over Cleveland. Their fourth win in a row. That's the longest current winning streak in the big leagues. Marcus Stroman kept New York in it, allowing just 1 run in 4 innings of work. 6 pitchers in all combined for the win. The Mets are a game and a half out of the wild card, and they'll go for the sweep tonight with Noah Syndergaard climbing the hill. NFL preseason week 3 kicks off as the 2-0 Giants visit Cincinnati. Giants fans excited to see more of rookie quarterback Daniel Jones. Elsewhere in the NFC East, the Redskins visit the Falcons while the Eagles host the Ravens. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thanks. And the owner of the NBA's Houston Rockets is giving a big boost to one little-known stock. Tillman Fertitta added 1 million shares to his stake of Wader Holdings yesterday, and that helped the stock rise 34%. Fertitta is a member of the food delivery company's board and purchased the shares between August 16th and 20th. He is now Wader's biggest shareholder with a stake of 6.5%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. How will Chairman Powell play the expectations game in Jackson Hole? We talk about the Fed's policy path next with T.S. Lombard, Chief U.S. Economist Steve Blitz. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. stock index futures are moving lower this morning. Investors awaiting an address by the Federal Reserve chief tomorrow. Treasuries are steady while gold edges lower. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 5 points. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures down 23. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 5/32. Yield 1.57%. The yield on the 2-year 1.55%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.33% or 20 cents at $55.88 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.5% or $7.40 to $15.08.30 an ounce. The euro 1.1092 against the dollar. The British pound 1.2146 and the yen's at 106.37. Today we get the weekly report on initial jobless claims at 8:30 Wall Street time. The Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index is out at 9:45 along with a look at manufacturing and leading indicators are out at 10. And the Gap and HP are among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump says he was insulted by the response he received from the Dutch Prime Minister when he proposed buying Greenland from them. She called it absurd. Yesterday, the president called her nasty. The president canceled his planned state visit to Denmark. President Trump lashed out at automobile manufacturers who've pushed back on his administration's plan to weaken fuel efficiency requirements, dismissing them as politically correct. He says his plan would lower car prices. In baseball, the Yankees lost to the A's 6-4. The Mets won along with the Orioles and Nationals. The Red Sox and Giants lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. We're joined now by Steve Blitz, Chief U.S. Economist at T.S. Lombard. Steve, good morning. As we look ahead to the Jackson Hole Symposium and Chairman Powell's speech, the market's all but pricing in a quarter point rate cut next month. Will the chairman meet the market's expectations?
Yeah, but I don't really think that's the main point of the exercise. I think that when you read through the minutes, there's you can almost see or read the a thread there of how he is going to explain the Fed reaction function going forward. I mean, there's the obvious employment and inflation, but there's also global growth and financial stability. And all four of those were in play in terms of deciding what direction policy should go in next.
So given that, I mean, those are some diverging factors that the chairman will be considering. How do you game this out?
Well, I think it's pretty well set that because the market's 100% basically on 25, they're going to go 25, simply because since the July 31 meeting, trade tensions have worsened. They haven't gotten better. And global growth hasn't really gotten better either. So, and that is, from the Fed's own words, the number one reason for them to have eased. And that has worsened as opposed to gotten better. But, you know, it's interesting they talk about the effective lower bound. They no longer call it the zero lower bound. And, you know, is the effective lower bound really something that's a higher number than zero? Because you can only go so far in terms of easing to support global growth before you start bringing in the issue of financial stability, which some participants discussed in the minutes. It's a very nuanced, and as you said, there's a lot of diverging movements in the economy, domestic and global, and various members of the committee are more focused on one than the other. But I think in the end, it was interesting that at the beginning they said financial conditions have eased because they priced in all these easings, and then when they go talk about, should we go 25, they seem to forget that if they want financial conditions to stay easy, they need to confirm what the markets are priced in the absence of an upturn in data.
Is there anything that the Fed can do with the balance sheet to affect policy?
Yeah, and that was a very interesting. The very beginning, they talked. Several participants or a number of participants or a few participants said that the. But they could, that given that all the worst thoughts about what would happen with the balance sheet never materialized, they could have been more aggressive. In the coming months, I think that the Fed holding the assets constant, now need to keep the liabilities constant where there's a natural outflow of the liabilities because of reserves leading the system. And the run-up in Treasury issuance that we're going to get, including the rebuilding of the Treasury's balances at the Fed, all of these things are likely to create a tightening of liquidity, especially in the funding markets. And it wouldn't shock me if in the coming months the Fed became more aggressive in buying assets at the short end of the curve.
In our last minute here, so what's your base case then in terms of the number of rate cuts we could see from the Fed by the end of this year?
Well, I think the Fed underplays the negative impact of an inverted curve on real economic activity. And the slower they go, the more the weight of this negative curve increases on economic activity. And so if they just do 25 in September, they almost guarantee several more 25s down the road. I think that if we get, and I don't know if we will, but if we get a weak, say, sub-100,000 kind of number unemployment in August, I think the door is open for those two guys who were who were advocating for 50 basis point cut to grow, and I think you could get a 50 basis point cut at the end of the month. And that plus the balance sheet could get them control on the curve and be a positive. Well, they just do 25, same old Fed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'll be 25s and 25s and 25s. No.
All right, Steve Blitz, Chief U.S. Economist, T.S. Lombard. Lot to look forward to as we await Chairman Powell's speech in Jackson Hole tomorrow morning. Stay with us. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's 5:25 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we preview the latest policy meeting results from the European Central Bank, plus a check of the markets and all the latest news in business, economics, and finance on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Global stocks struggling for direction ahead of tomorrow's speech from Jerome Powell. U.S. futures are lower after minutes from the Federal Reserve showed division among policymakers. We get more from a Bloomberg FX strategist, David Finnerty.
If you look at the markets, they're still pricing in two rate cuts this year. And I think Powell's going to do a delicate path of being sort of neutral. I don't think it'll be overly dovish. I think he may signal one cut, but again, I think it's another insurance cut. I think he'll reiterate that at the moment he does not see a series of cuts. Based off that logic, then I think the markets have overpriced in too many cuts, so I think the yields will move higher off his speech.
And right now the yield on 10-year treasuries at 1.57%.
Now we'll have interviews from Jackson Hole with several regional Fed presidents. Today we speak with Kansas City Fed Chief Esther George at 7:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Tomorrow morning, tune in for conversations with James Bullard, Robert Kaplan, Loretta Mester, and Patrick Harker.
The European Central Bank is also in focus today, with the ECB publishing the account of its latest policy meeting at 7:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Bloomberg's Caroline Hepker has more.
The notes from the last ECB meeting may give markets clues on three fronts: the size of a rate cut, which markets expect to be 10 basis points, also how much the central bank might spend every month on a new round of bond purchases after the governing council stressed the need for highly accommodative policy, and lastly, what Mario Draghi and policymakers may decide to buy in a relaunched QE programme, given the shortage of high-quality government bonds. In London, I'm Caroline Hepke, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Caroline. We have somewhat encouraging PMI data out of Europe. Activity in the euro area's private sector unexpectedly picked up this month, though a meaningful rebound remains out of sight. Markets composite PMI rose to 51.8, though orders in Germany fell the most in more than 6 years.
And coming up at 9:45 a.m. on Wall Street, we get a reading on U.S. manufacturing PMI. Economists forecast a reading of 50.5. Right now, S&P futures are lower, down 9 points. Dow futures down 71. NASDAQ futures down 38. The DAX in Germany's down a third of a percent. CAC in Paris down about 0.6%. And the FTSE 100 down 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 5/32nds, yield 1.57%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.55%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.3% or 18 cents at $55.87 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.5% or $7 to $15.0870 an ounce. The euro 1.1085 against the dollar. The British pound at 1.2138. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump commented on his back and forth with Denmark's prime minister concerning Greenland. On his way to Louisville, Kentucky, the president says that it was not a nice way of saying Greenland was not for sale.
I looked forward to going, but I thought that the prime minister's statement that it was absurd, it was an absurd idea, was nasty. I thought it was an inappropriate statement. All she had to do is say, no, we wouldn't be interested.
Denmark Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said, thankfully, the time where you buy and sell other countries and populations is over. This just in, South Korea says it will end a military intelligence sharing pact with Japan. Cutting the payroll tax is no longer on President Trump's list of possible actions to boost the economy. Trump said yesterday he was dropping that idea because, as he sees it, the U.S. already has a strong economy. Attorney General William Barr says he is completely confident Jeffrey Epstein took his own life. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
This comes as he reorganizes management at the New York City jail. He says the investigation is moving forward, although it's complicated by witnesses wanting to be represented by the union, as well as reluctance to be questioned in general.
Epstein's death, I think we will see, was a suicide. And I do think that there are some irregularities at the center. But I have brought in Kathy Hawk Sawyer now to run the Bureau of Prisons.
And he says she is outstanding. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump lashed out at automobile manufacturers who've pushed back on his administration's plan to weaken fuel efficiency requirements, dismissing them as politically correct. In a tweet, the president says, "My proposal to the automobile companies would lower the average price of a car to consumers by more than $3,000. Motor vehicle deaths in the U.S. fell during the first 6 months of 2019. According to the National Safety Council, an estimated 18,580 people died in motor vehicle crashes during the first 6 months of 2019, down 3% compared to this time last year. Washington Governor Jay Inslee is dropping out of the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries, I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Yankees outhit the A's again, but it didn't matter as Oakland had a pair of two-run homers, ending Jay Happ's night early in a 6-4 win at the Coliseum. Happ lasted just four innings. New York has dropped three straight, and it cost them the best record in baseball, with L.A. walking off Toronto at Chavez Ravine. Masahiro Tanaka tries to right the ship against Tanner Roark at 9:30. New York enters play with a 9-game lead in the division over Tampa Bay, who beats Seattle. Mets have the longevity to stay in the wild card hunt for the rest of the year, testing their resolve with a 4-3 walk-off win over Cleveland in 10 innings. J.D. Davis, the hero. The bullpen did its part, said skipper Mickey Callaway.
That was the missing piece of the puzzle from the beginning. If you were really watching early in the season, we were doing the same things late in the game that we're doing now. Just our bullpen was struggling. And we knew, hey, if we can get our bullpen straightened out, we're going to win a lot of games, because we would have won a lot of games in the first half.
Five relievers allow just two runs in six innings to keep New York a game and a half out of the wild card. They'll play for the sweep tonight when Noah Syndergaard takes the ball. NFL Jets host the Saints on Saturday in week three of the preseason. Running back Le'Veon Bell getting more comfortable with Sam Darnold under center.
He has all the intangibles. He has the size. He has the mindset. Because you can see him. He's a competitor. Like he doesn't want to come out here. Like every day in practice, he literally wants to get better. It's hard to, you know, somebody that's like that, because I'm like that, you know. So you got to love that about him, because he literally wants to be perfect.
Bell spent his career working with Big Ben in Pittsburgh and is back to work for the 2-0 Giants and rookie quarterback Daniel Jones when they visit Cincinnati tonight. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Okay, Rob, thanks. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with a cover on the protests in Hong Kong. Dan Tancate wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
Hong Kongers are scared of what's going to happen, and Hong Kongers see a future where they're subject to the Communist Party, and they're fighting against it right now.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now, and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Now it's time for the Tri-State Business Report. Good morning, Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Morning, Nathan. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio has pledged to help out a Brooklyn pizzeria that closed over a tax dispute. The mayor calls DeFara the best pizza place in the city and says it has to be saved, but the mayor's been criticized on social media for moving to rescue a private business while failing to fix problems facing the city. Rockefeller Group has started construction on 10 Edison, a 900,000-square-foot industrial project in Edison, New Jersey. The property will be developed as a speculative distribution center. It's supposed to complete it by August of 2020. The property used to be the site of an ExxonMobil research lab and synthetic oil facility. Well, it's sales tax-free week in Connecticut. Shoppers getting ready for the back-to-school season. Through Saturday, no tax will be applied to shoes or clothing priced at less than $100. The state expects shoppers to save nearly $5 million. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
All right, Ed, thank you. It's 5:39 on Wall Street, and Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, we're looking at quarterly results from Dick's Sporting Goods.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Farm tensions escalate as a USDA staffer is threatened in the Midwest.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the 30-day target Angela Merkel gave Boris Johnson to sort out Brexit.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, we're watching for earnings from Hormel Foods.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting the co-founder of Google's DeepMind has been placed on leave over concerns about some of the projects he led.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. After earnings from Target, Nordstrom and L Brands beat estimates. We're on the lookout for another reading on retail today when The Gap reports its results. Here are the preview. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Momentum at Gap was disappointing in the first quarter, and Bloomberg Intelligence says that may have improved in the second quarter. But forecasters think the only possible improvement in same-store sales is at the Old Navy chain. Negative numbers are likely from Gap and Banana Republic outlets. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Futures on Wall Street pointing to a lower open this morning. S&P futures down almost 9 points right now. Dow futures down 73 points. NASDAQ futures down 37 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we speak with Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael about Boris Johnson's very tough sell job for reopening Brexit negotiations with just 71 days left.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures moving lower this morning. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 8 points. Dow futures down 69. NASDAQ futures down 35. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. 10-year Treasury up 5/32nds. Yield 1.57%. Yield on the 2-year 1.55%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.6% or 35 cents to $56.03 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.5% or $8.10 to $15.07.60 an ounce. The euro 1.1082 against the dollar. The British pound 1.2131 and the yen is at 106.36. A busy morning for economic data. We get the weekly report on initial jobless claims out at 8:30 Wall Street time. The Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index out at 9:45. We also get a look at manufacturing at that time and leading indicators out at 10. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump explained why he canceled a planned state visit to a longtime European ally, Denmark. President says he's insulted by the response he received from the Denmark Prime Minister when he proposed buying Greenland from them. She called it absurd. He called her nasty. South Korea said it would withdraw from an intelligence-sharing agreement with Japan. It extends their feud over trade measures and historical grievances into security cooperation. In baseball, the Yankees lost to the A's 6-4. The Mets won along with the Orioles and Nationals. The Red Sox and Giants lost. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Opinion, informed perspectives, and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news.
It's coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street, and it is time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion. Columnist Therese Raphael joins us from our London bureau to talk Brexit renegotiations this morning, Therese, because with all the news about the Federal Reserve, the trade war, negative bond yields, it seems like Brexit gets lost in the shuffle. So where do things stand at this point? I know time is running out before the deal or no deal scenario.
Yeah, that's right. So there are about 70 days left until the October 31st extension deadline, which means if a deal is not reached, Britain leaves with no deal at all. And that has all sorts of ramifications. A leaked government paper on Sunday suggested it could be pretty bad, including medicine shortages, food shortages, fuel shortages. The government of Boris Johnson is, of course, denying that there will be any such disruption or chaos, and has been very much on message saying they are very prepared to leave on October 31st without a deal. Parliament will not be able to stop them. And that's the message he's taking into his meetings with German Chancellor Angela Merkel yesterday, with French President Emmanuel Macron today, and at the G7 summit.
Let's talk about that meeting yesterday between Johnson and Merkel. How did that go?
Well, it was fascinating, not just for what they said, but really for how it was interpreted. So the British media interpreted Merkel's statements as giving Johnson the green light to try to find some kind of compromise. So they saw more than a glimmer of hope in Merkel's comments. Now, those who watched it in German said, well, you know, no such thing. She was being polite. She was restating the EU's position. She was stating the obvious. She was absolutely not giving way on this very controversial part of the Brexit deal, which is called the Irish backstop, which is effectively an insurance policy to keep the Irish border open in the event after Brexit, in the event they can't find a way of keeping Britain in the customs union so that border traffic can continue unimpeded. So there were very differing interpretations. Macron, on the other hand, was pretty unequivocal. He said, you know, I think Britain has far more to lose from Brexit than it has to gain from any trade deal with the U.S. And I don't think the British people want to be vassals of America. So those were sort of fighting words going into today's lunch.
Yeah, let's talk about that lunch, because we had heard from a Macron office official who had told us yesterday that no deal Brexit is their central scenario now. So, it makes it sound as though there isn't much room for renegotiation there.
Yeah, well, Macron's side has been saying this for a while. And remember, Macron drove a hard line when it came to getting the extension to October 31st. He was opposing that. And the Germans were seen to be more sort of willing to give the UK a little bit more time. But, you know, a lot of this is, you know, two sides talking at cross purposes. You often hear from the UK side, well, this will be a big hit to the UK, to the European economy. And we know the Eurozone is going through a tough time right now with political upheaval in Italy, Germany just approving a big stimulus plan. But if you look at trade between the two, you know, the UK exports to the EU, it's about 45% of total exports. The EU 27 exports going to the UK, it's about 6% of their total exports. So even though in numbers terms, the EU exports more to the UK, about 400 billion euros, in percentage terms, it's much smaller. So there is a sense from Macron and many EU countries that they can take the hit.
So is there any expectation then that we could see any progress made at the G7 this weekend, particularly with President Trump being part of the proceedings and, you know, potentially taking up all the oxygen in the room?
Well, if I had to bet, I would bet against any progress on Brexit at the G7. And the reason being, I think the EU will want to wait for the first couple weeks of Parliament back in session to see whether there is really any hope that legislators in the UK who oppose a no-deal Brexit can find a way to stop that train. I think we're only likely to see real movement, if at all, sort of toward the second week of September when it becomes clear whether that's possible.
And that raises the possibility of more calls potentially for early elections and no confidence votes once the opposition comes back in, yeah?
Yeah, that will be very interesting to see. Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the Labour Party, has said he will table a vote of no confidence when Parliament comes back into session, which is September 3rd, though it requires a motion. So probably the earliest we'd get a confidence vote would be the 4th. However, Labour is now polling a latest poll, which is a slightly outlier poll, so let's not put too much stock in it. It's about 14 points behind the Conservatives. So the question is, will Corbyn really want to risk an early election when he's trailing so badly in the polls? versus the situation in Parliament now where Boris Johnson has a one person majority. Mm-hmm. And so he's got quite a weak government. So I think that will also be interesting to see.
Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael, thanks for getting us up to speed on Brexit. Really appreciate it. You can read her column at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Potisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
A congressional investigation has begun into the largest companies in the e-cigarette industry, including Juul Labs and Reynolds American. The Financial Accounting Standards Board will examine how charities account for non-cash donations and come up with guidance so they don't inflate their worth and dupe donors. And California's Supreme Court won't halt enforcement of a law requiring presidential candidates to release 5 years of tax returns, but it will speed up its decision in a challenge brought by the California Republican Party.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now another legal story we're watching. Wall Street regulators easing the Volcker Rule's ban on banks making speculative investments. For more on the development, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Cornell University law professor Robert Hockett.
Bob, tell us about the biggest changes that were approved with this new rule.
So the principal change, I think the one that is maybe most welcome on the part of the banks, is a change in the presumption that was part of the Volcker Rule before. So previously, the presumption was that if you were engaging in short-term trading, it was probably speculative rather than hedging, and it was up to you to rebut that presumption, right? So basically to prove that you were innocent, so to speak, or that you were merely hedging, in other words, rather than speculating. That presumption will go by the wayside now, and I think that that's probably going to elicit the greatest sort of sigh of relief on the part of the banks.
How much of a victory is this for the banks?
It's easy to overstate the degree of the victory, but it's to some extent going to determine the actual cause of the sort of cutback in proprietary trading over the last few years has been, right? So as you know, the proprietary trading books of the larger banks are much smaller than they were before Volcker went into effect. But there's some sort of uncertainty, I guess we would say, as to whether the Volcker Rule itself was the reason for that or whether there are other reasons that sound more in sort of changes in the industry. If it's the latter, then the change in Volcker isn't going to make much difference. If, on the other hand, the Volcker Rule itself was an important part of that story, well, then, of course, it could bring about an upsurge in proprietary trading of a kind that was quite common, of course, before 2008.
One Democratic FDIC board member warned that the rollback could again endanger the financial system by allowing lenders to recklessly trade hundreds of billions of dollars in risky assets as they did before the 2008 financial crisis. Do you agree with that?
Well, I understand where Mr. Grinberg's coming from on that. But again, whether he's right or not sort of depends, again, on what the cause of the decline in proprietary trading since 2013 has been. If, again, that was owing to the Volcker Rule itself, then he could very well be right. If, on the other hand, there have just been changes in the industry that make proprietary trading less attractive than it used to be, then it might very well be that his alarm is not quite as justified.
And that's Cornell University law professor Robert Hockett speaking with the Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.